Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. The hot spring real estate market is officially in gear, and our next guest is calling for a closer look and different policies for the luxury end of the market. He says it's taking off, even in a Yankee stronghold like Boston. And luxury here means amenities such as private theaters and spas, golf simulation rooms, all at a cost per condominium of some $6 million on average. Chuck Collins with the think tank, the Institute for Policy Studies in Jamaica Plain, says most of these uber-luxurious residences aren't actually homes, but what he calls sanctuaries that are nothing more than wealth storage units that help the very wealthy stay that way. He's also suggesting that these properties be subject to a different tax. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Deborah, for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear from you. What's your housing situation? Are you looking for housing and experiencing sticker shock? Do you think these units are just what Boston needs to step up its game, maybe collect higher property taxes? And should these units be subject to different luxury taxes? Call us with your thoughts at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. I also want to say that Evan Horowitz, who's the quick study columnist for the Boston Globe, is with us to join this conversation as well, because Evan, you have looked into a lot of things happening in the real estate world in Boston. So thanks for being with us.
Great to be here.
So first off, Chuck, I want to start with you. Sanctuaries. I'm glad I can say that word. I'm kind of proud of myself, actually. But you say no one is living in these places. Can you explain?
Well, I wouldn't say no one is living in them, but one of the reasons people come from all over the world to buy these luxury apartment buildings is they're a form of wealth storage. They're an asset class, meaning that it's just like investing in the stock market and in bonds, and a wealthy billionaire or from another country will say, well, I'm going to invest in Boston real estate because it will hold its value. It'll be a safe investment. Right. I may come and visit once in a while. But very few, we know from looking at the other luxury towers, very few of them claim a residency exemption. So people aren't really living in them.
Right, right. So how many? What do the numbers look like?
Well, we know, like looking at Millennium Tower, maybe 25%, less than 25% have said that they'll take a residential exemption. Huh. And if you look at sort of the actual assessor's records, you'll see a huge number of shell companies, which is a telltale sign that this is sort of a shadow investment. It's a hidden investment. We don't necessarily know if it's a Russian oligarch or a Chinese investor or just somebody from down the road who's hiding the ownership.
So we don't have any idea who these investors are, the 75% of these folks who may not be taking the residential exemption here or may not actually be living in the units, just investing in them. Any thoughts on who they might be?
Well, we if you look at those assessor reports, you will see a huge number of names from China and Hong Kong. You can, we're just starting to research and Google that. But, invite me back in a month because we're actually digging down a little bit into this ownership question.
Yeah,
but one simple rule change is to require a disclosure of what they call beneficial ownership, who really owns this unit, to sort of close off the money laundering side of this problem, which is a global problem.
Right, right. Evan, you've looked at some of these numbers, right?
I have.
What did you find?
Yeah. So it may be the case that there is a lot, I don't doubt, in fact, that there is a high vacancy rate in these apartments in the luxury end. The question is, how much does this affect your rent? How much is it trickling down? And it's not clear how big an effect this is citywide. We've got about 300,000 apartments or housing units in the city of Boston. And about 5,000 of them, it seems, are classified as sort of rental places. I mean, that is vacation places, a second home, that kind of thing. And maybe another 4,000 to 5,000 that seem to be rented but unoccupied. So maybe somewhere between 1.5% and 3%. It doesn't mean it's not worth doing something about this problem. It just means you shouldn't think this is the answer to why the rent is too darn high.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but you do have a proposal for this, Chuck, and you're talking about a different kind of tax. Explain that.
Well, I would just agree with Evan that there's not a one-to-one nexus between this and rising costs, but we do know luxury housing like this pushes up land value. Mm-hmm. And even if it wasn't having a huge negative effect on the housing market, we could levy a luxury tax, essentially, for the services that the city provides in addition to paying property taxes, a kind of graduated luxury tax. And so I would argue we should mimic San Francisco. We should have a very high-end real estate transfer tax, you know, 1%, 2% on units over $2.5 million,
mm-hmm.
and a tax on vacant units so that properties that are sitting vacant for long periods of time also contribute to a housing, affordable housing fund.
But, you know, some folks might say, well, I'm already paying a lot on my $2.5 million-plus piece of property, paying more than most are. And, you know, if you're talking in a Millennium Tower kind of a way, most of us are paying some taxes and not using any city services. So aren't you already getting a deal? Why do I need to be taxed more?
Well, think of the wealth storage function that we're providing as a city. And if you look at the marketing materials, and actually I encourage people to look at onedalton.com's marketing videos, who they're reaching out to, it's not for people who live in Boston. It is marketing to an international market. So what are they advertising? They're advertising safe, walkable cities, infrastructure, cultural institutions, all kinds of things, amenities that we as Bostonians create together through our taxes over time. And I think for the price of protecting those assets, if you will, we should ask for more from this particular clientele.
Hmm. Evan, your thoughts before we go to callers?
Yeah, I mean, this issue sits really at the intersection of two fundamental economic challenges. One is inequality. The other is housing prices, excessive housing prices. And one of the benefits of a tax solution is it can address both of these challenges. Higher taxes will feed money to the city, which could be used for rental vouchers, it could be used for affordable housing, it could be used for any number of things. It also can be redistributed in a way that affects inequality. Again, I don't think this is a solution to either of these problems, you know, in toto, but as a step, it makes sense to think of them together and to think of taxes as a way to address them at the same time.
Okay. Listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. What's your housing situation, and what do you think of these luxury units? Are they exactly what Boston needs to sort of step up its game? Should they be subject to different luxury taxes? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Dylan is calling from Cambridge. Dylan, you're on the air.
Hi, I would like to ask your experts if they have thoughts on a foreign buyer tax. So this isn't so much a luxury tax as it is a tax on what I would call speculators without borders. Hmm. Your experts may know there are policies like that in Vancouver, Toronto, and I think the best practice in the world is in Singapore, where they tax both foreign investors and have a tiered tax for domestic investors. Any thought on that?
Okay, Dylan, that's a great question. Thanks so much for your call. Chuck, thoughts on that? A foreign buyer tax. Are you familiar with that?
I am. And both the city of Vancouver and the province of British Columbia have implemented some form of that. It a little bit borders on sort of this, blaming the foreigners thing. I think we should understand that this is global capital. It's both foreign and domestic. It's having a disrupting effect on our community. So I wouldn't distinguish between the different forms of capital. I wouldn't peg the tax just. And the other reality is most of these are, again, you know, a large percentage are shell corporations. We actually don't know the national origins. They're kind of these layers of trusts and shell corporations, and it's hard to know whether this is wealth down the street or wealth from across the world.
Mm.
So I think it would become a huge distraction, actually, and I think it has in Vancouver a little bit.
Evan?
Yeah, I mean, the one reason to think differently, I think, about foreign investors is precisely the question of whether there's money laundering involved, whether they're trying to escape their own national capital controls. Like, one reason Chinese investors have been so interested in purchasing real estate abroad, whether it's on the East Coast here in Boston or on the West Coast in places like Vancouver, is to escape limits that the Chinese government imposes on their investments.
Mm.
And in that regard, it might be worth focusing on foreign investors as a group.
Mm-hmm. I want to take another call. David is calling from Cambridge. David, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I was just wondering if there's a comparison that can be made about what happened in San Francisco during the dot-com boom. The prices went up on housing that a lot of the artists and musicians had to leave the city, and it really changed the landscape. So just thoughts on that, and whether or not you would consider a tax that would help subsidize the arts in exchange for development rights. Hmm.
Okay, David, thanks so much for the call. Chuck, I'm wondering, you mentioned San Francisco earlier. Tell us what San Francisco is doing. And, you know, not all that long ago, I remember doing a segment about please don't let us become San Francisco. Everyone's afraid of you know, pricing so many people out. What's San Francisco doing to try to prevent this? And could Boston do something similar?
Well, I think Evan and I were talking about this. San Francisco has become kind of this inequality dystopia now. I mean, if you go and walk around the streets of San Francisco, you see the sort of stunning levels of inequality. And I think that's what led people to say, well, let's levy this high-end real estate transfer tax along with other interventions. So it's not just the one approach. But that tax has been in place. The voters supported it. It raised about $44 million last year. The City Council of San Francisco has designated it for two things. One is free community college to anyone who lives in San Francisco. So that has actually made a huge difference in the life of many San Francisco residents. They also invested in fixing the trees of the city. So there's no reason why, per David's call, why couldn't you could identify a number of uninvested things. People travel and want to live visit Boston because of the arts and cultural institutions. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should that should be part of what the luxury tax does, because that's essentially why some people are actually coming from around the world here.
Okay, I want to take another call. Jake is calling from Dedham. Jake, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. What are you thinking about the housing situation in Boston and these luxury units? Does something have to give here?
Yeah, so I think that the home ownership has been a way for my parents' generation and generations before that to acquire wealth, to get their foot in the door of upward mobility. And it seems like now with an increase in these sort of super decadent, over-the-top, lavish lifestyle houses, it's going to start to freeze out people from being able to participate in that area. It's going to end up stopping the middle class, the blue-collar workers, from being able to participate in that form of upward financial mobility mm-hmm. that our parents and our grandparents were able to pass on to us.
Right. So you're concerned about how this affects home ownership in general. Is that right, Jake?
It absolutely does. I mean, we bought a home in Dedham because we couldn't afford to live just over the border in West Roxbury, where the housing prices were, for the same quality, same size, were $75,000 to $125,000 difference.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Thanks so much for the call. Evan, what do we know about how far people are now moving out and what high housing costs are doing to the city of Boston?
Well, I mean, to Jake's point, I think Jake is right to worry about whether young families today can build assets through real estate the way their parents could. But I would only say, if you care about sort of the economic diversity of Boston proper, as opposed to greater Boston or distant Boston or whatever we're calling the places people have to move to now, if you care about, you know, Bohemia, as the previous caller was talking about the arts, then this is not the conversation. Then we have to have a different conversation, a conversation about rent control or social housing or a massive change in rental vouchers. Vacancy rates in luxury buildings is an issue worth discussing on its own, but it's not going to get you anywhere near what you need to do to address concerns like Jake's. That's going to require something much more fundamental in terms of changes to the way we treat housing and apportion housing units.
Hmm. I just wonder, though, we have a proposal on the table for a million, quote-unquote, millionaire's tax, right? And one of, you know, I've noticed that folks ask these kinds of questions. You know, where do we draw the line? Maybe I don't like, you know, maybe you should pay more because you drive a BMW, right? Maybe you should pay more to use the road because you have a luxury car. Maybe, you know, where is the line drawn? And where is the line drawn in terms of asking people with the money for more money for taxes? And how do we deal with that to make sure that we're being fair all the way around? I know there's gross income inequality, but what do we do? Evan first.
Well, I mean, with the millionaire's tax, you draw the line at $1 million. I mean, that the idea is, like, it's a civic decision. There isn't an obvious, natural, inevitable place to say everyone above this line or this level should pay more. This is an ongoing discussion. We go to voters every time. We say, we think someone goes to voters and says, we think $1 million is the right place to draw a line. Above that, you should have a surtax. And voters say yes, or voters say no. And you try again if that doesn't work. But I think, you know, line drawing like that is part of the civic process. But the difficulty of drawing lines is not a reason not to do it. It's just a reason to continually engage in this process and think about how we can raise more revenue and how we can address issues like inequality.
Mm-hmm. Chuck, your thoughts on where do we draw the line? Are we worried about a precedent here? And are we worried about scaring off wealthy investors, too?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should just remember that after World War II, we had a much more progressive, steeply progressive tax system at the federal level. We taxed income and wealth at higher levels. We invested in the kind of public infrastructure and public goods that helped build a white middle class after World War II. So I actually think we need to restore some of that progressivity, and I think the millionaire tax is one of those ways. I mean, it's wildly popular, even among some of the people who are going to pay it. By the way, I would suspect many of the people buying these luxury units are not residents of Massachusetts and will not pay that high income tax. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about a tax on the transfer of very expensive apartments that would also capture some of that wealth as it touches down. So I'm comfortable restoring taxes that essentially are being paid by the top one-tenth of 1% of income and wealth holders, and investing it in the kind of public goods that it's really in everyone's interest at this point to not sort of further polarize, and including for people who are going to be living in those buildings. They're going to want to live in a Boston that has relative equality.
Yeah, but do people still think like that? I mean, look at where we're at, right? In this divisive time in our culture that, yes, it's not all about me. It's okay. I'm going to give up some of what I have for the greater good.
Well, in a way, that's why I like this real estate tax, this luxury real estate tax, because think about it. This is global wealth that's moving around the world, mostly avoiding taxation, and it's touching down in real property. This is one of the few places where, you know, we have trillions of dollars hidden in offshore tax havens now. This is actually showing up in our community. We don't even have to know if it's Evan who's the shell owner, because we'll just tax that unit as a unit. It's a place where we can actually make a difference on these extreme inequalities. So I think that's one strong reason for why. And I think we should move with a number of cities in tandem. You know, New York, Washington, D.C., Miami, all these coastal cities are dealing with the same issue. If we put forward the same package of high-end luxury real estate transfer taxes, vacancy controls, maybe disclosures of beneficial ownership, if everybody does that, then the millionaire migration problem is at least not going to be claimed. People are still going to move to Florida, but it won't be because there's a millionaire transfer tax.
Evan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the polling is clear that people do want to pay more in taxes. That is, the support for the millionaire tax is quite high.
Can I say I don't?
That's fair enough. The majority, the great majority of people across the country, and dare I say in this room, but not everyone, is ready to pay more in taxes. You see it among the teacher strikes recently in these red states. They're polling people and people saying, yes, charge me more in order to provide better salaries for the teachers in my state.
All right. We'll keep talking about this, I'm sure. Evan Horowitz, quick study columnist for the Boston Globe. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Deborah.
Also, Chuck Collins, director of the Program on Inequality and the Common Good at the Institute for Policy Studies. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Deborah.
And thanks to our listeners as well for all of your comments on this topic today. Stay with us. Coming up, a new film questions what it means to be intelligent and how to empower people with intellectual disabilities. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston. We'll